Hello, and welcome to episode 257 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the Instagram comic Black, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the writer of Atomic Hercules, Tony Esmond.
Are you going to include the bit where you said put down the dildo, Dan? Because I like that. That sounded quite good, like quite alliterative.
You put that in if you want, Vince.
I mean, it was quite a heavy thud that we heard.
It was his phone, though. Yeah.
That's what he calls it. as you can tell, it's just the three of us this week. We're just here to talk about comics and nonsense. There's a couple of comics topics that are just fresh out of the oven, I think. A couple of bits in
here. Yeah, it's sort of bubbling in on and off a bit, haven't they? But it's sort of we've taken a hit on one of them this week,
Yeah. So, we know the world is a bit of a crazy place for a lot of different reasons at the moment. So for the next hour and a half to 2 hours, we're going to talk a bit of nonsense and comics and recommend some indie books and great creators, of course. And probably mess up the sponsorship ad, which will come in a minute. But, I haven't had a chance to read so many comics this week.
Oh, okay. You've been busy at work, though. Every time I speak to you, you're like, fucking hell, I've got a day and a half today.
Yeah. It's been a long week for many reasons. Are you well, Dan? Are you okay now?
Yeah, fine, fit. Went out running again, so it's all good.
Have you eaten the dessert?
I did, and I was massively disappointing.
Why?
Because I wanted it to be so much more than it was, and it was...
You built it up in your brain. You put it on a pedestal, didn't you?
Exactly. Yeah. It's pretty pathetic. So, what was Dan it? Slams Cadbury's Crunchy dessert. It wasn't very good.
Yeah.
See, should have gone for the chocolate buttons.
I like the chocolate buttons one. I think I prefer the buttons more than the sort of gooey chocolate bit, though.
It's good, isn't it? Yeah. It is really nice. Do you know what else is really nice?
Me.
Yes, that's true.
But if you can't get Tony on an app, then you should go. You should check out Comic
House. Tony on an app.
Yeah.
There's an idea for you, Pete.
What an image that is, like a Snapchat.
It's just me moaning about stuff, swearing.
your profile on a few of those dating ones.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you go on any dating sites with your new beard free face fee?
No. Why would I?
I don't know.
but my face is free to the elements now.
Are you keeping up the shaving? You're not growing it back. You're just going to keep it as clean.
I'm going to keep it off for the moment.
Yeah, okay. It's nice for a change, isn't it?
Yeah. And then eventually when winter comes in, I'll end up looking like Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant, probably.
I can see you saying the joke. It's joke. Are you growing your beard back? You said, well, save on heating bills.
Yep. And plus you can keep food in there. And where you can keep loads of great comics is with our sponsor, Comic House. We'll get through this ad somehow. The Indie Comic Marketplace with a Difference. Fantastic. Huge supporters of the indie comic scene. If you publish your own books and you've got boxes of them in your house, so you should list your book on there for free on comichouse.com and you can start selling straight away. It's just another avenue to get your books out there. And also they have an app, not like the one with Tony on. Oh, no. This one's just got loads and loads of indie comics. It's like Netflix for comics. Subscription, only £3 a month. That's the less than a price of a single digital issue.
You can buy anything for less than £3 these days.
Yeah. I'm going on Comixology weekly and, look at covers and stuff. And yeah, because of the price hike, it's a bit of a kick in the balls. So £3 a month. Is brilliant. You get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics that's growing all the time. What great stuff's on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got Sprouting and Other Tales of the Curious, Bones of the Sea by Gareth A. Hopkins, The Intercoastal Extension by the same author, United One by a friend of the show, Johnny Cannon. We've got Aletheia Chapter One, which I read, Spare Keys for Strange Doors, Ice Gift, Broke Down and Four Dead Bodies, Volume One, Issue Three. And the forever update in Surrealsville.
Hey, back again. Once again. Yeah.
Back once again with the Renegade Master.
D4 damage.
So I've read a number of these titles, which I'll talk about briefly in the recommend section later in the show.
Nice. Yes.
Stay tuned.
It's just loads of indie comic books. So if you want to discover something new, then definitely sign up to Comic House. There's a 14-day free trial. You get an extra month with the code Stay Safe.
Yeah, I believe that's still valid.
That should be still valid, unless you're listening to this in from space in the year 2300. Then it's probably not still. It may still be valid. Yeah. We'll have to ask Pete about that. but yeah, you can get an extra month free, and yeah, you should definitely check it out because we love them. They support us, and they're fighting.
Look at it every week. Yeah.
In the name of Indie Comics. So there you go. And they've got things like, you know, top 10. So, if you put your comic on there, people are always hungry for new indie comic content. So,
yeah,
if you've got books just lying around that are, the PDFs just gathering dust, put them on there.
Yeah. It's well worth reading them.
Yeah. It's well worth it.
Because they can check out that and then check, if they like it, go and check out your new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you work when. You discover new creators with things like that, you know, because we always talk about discover new creators, and I always think that the ideal is you pick up an indie book, I love this, what other work have they done, and then you pick up those books. It doesn't always work like that, does it? Have you found that sometimes you read a book and it just captures you so much that you have to go back to their back catalogue, etc.?
Yeah, I think it lies in what you're saying there, V, is how you find out more about them. So,
yeah.
Because if I review a book on Comic House, for example, I'll go to... they haven't got anything else on there. I'll normally look them up on Twitter is my first easy option to look someone up. And I tend to do that, actually. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, to be fair, it's usually always going to the Twitter. I think you used to be able to, on Comic House, on the website, I can't remember about the app, but you can click on them and it takes you to their other work. And I'm sure you can put a creator bio and say my website is blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I'm sure you must be able to. Yeah. It's a shame because it'll take sales away from Comic House, but they're, they're fairly benevolent like that, aren't they? So they probably is on there, yeah. Hmm. I tend to look at the app. I rarely, unless I'm uploading something, I rarely go to the actual
website.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely for me as well going on the app for it.
Mm. Yeah. It's an app world really for comics now, isn't it? In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, especially it's going that way. We'll talk about that in a minute.
I mean, certainly with obviously the pandemics and things like that, the comic book stores are doing what they can to keep the public, the hard copy books in people's hands.
Mm.
Yeah.
But then there's people that are out in the middle of nowhere that have, can't get to their local comic book store.
Well, that leads us a little bit into what we're going to talk about, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Although, the discovery, back to the discovery thing, just briefly.
Yeah.
A bit of an early shout out. Because there was this discovery that had recently, and one of our recent guests as well, and Jason McNamara was a great sort of discovery. I know. Going back to his back catalogue and reading that old stuff was great. And a big thank you to those guys for printing our pull quote.
Oh, yeah, we got a pull quote, didn't we? Yeah, yeah. Fucking hell.
Yeah. which is great. So,
thank you very much.
Yeah, love that.
I've sworn off of Twitter, but I did jump on there and tweeted a response to something he put the other day, and somebody was like, what's the most important thing when you're launching a comic book? And Jason McNamara said, the title. And I said about the Pat Mills advice saying you should call your comic after your main character or characters. And I said, I think that's a pretty good one. And he said, well, I've never done that, and I've literally sold dozens of comic books.
I was only talking about him. I did a little pod about Airboy. So we'll talk about him and Greg Hinkle, because he's mentioned, if you got the Airboy trade, you've got it, haven't you? You both got it, haven't you? The Airboy
and Hop. Yeah.
I haven't. I haven't got it yet.
You've not got it? Oh, okay. Interesting. Birthday coming up. The if you go to, Jason McNamara's mentioned in the prologue that as to how he came across Hinkle to use him on Airboy.
Nice. So from discovering creators, which everyone should be doing right now, to big publishers and distribution.
Mm.
Now,
there's a
topic that's just come up, which is obviously shot through all the comics news sites, etc. I haven't kept completely up to date with it, so I'm looking forward to finding out more about it.
Yeah.
You know, Because I know, Tony, you know a lot more about it. So
I don't know if a lot more is the fair thing.
You
so
know
I
more
know
than me, trust me, because I literally only know the very basics.
Hey, so there's something...
I got the wrong end of the stick. I thought this would be a good move, but as it's played out, it's fucking terrible.
For us, certainly. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
Well, as I understand it, I'm following it a little bit on 11 O'Clock Comics on their Slack group and on their podcast, and they had the lady in who runs DCBS, and I think her, along with a company that, if you look behind it, is actually, I think, Midtown or Mile High, I can't remember off the top of my head, I think it's Midtown, are going to now, we're managing the distribution. They had setting up a distribution thing, and Diamond obviously dropped away for a bit, and Diamond are back again now, and comics have allegedly start coming out of shops, although I'm still yet to get mine. But the this week, DC announced that they were dropping Diamond, and they were going with these two companies, as I understand it, if not more companies. However, us here in the UK, us only rely on Diamond for that area of comics. There are other distributors. I mean, Nobro uses a couple of different distributors in different areas of the world, although we are on Diamond as well. So there are other ways to get some other books, but DC are kind of... stuck with Diamond into British comic shops. If DC are not going with Diamond suddenly, and books are coming out now regularly, we won't be getting any DC books.
No.
So the problem is we're stuck here. I think the King of Maths, Sarah Harris, worked it out, and she worked out it just to import it would cost £8 a book or something.
Fuck.
Yeah. Now, just before we came on, I'm just checking to see if he's replied to it. Doesn't look that way. Jonah Wieland is, I think he's in marketing at DC. Follow him on Twitter. I've just messaged him, or an hour ago, I messaged him, say, "Hey, Jonah, not sure if this is your department, if you can help. There's a lot of lifelong DC fans in the UK. Do you have a way that we will be able to buy your books? Do you have a solution for the Diamond situation? Fingers crossed, I've many decades of loving DC." So I'm hoping that by the end of the show, he will have replied, because he's quite a regular tweeter.
Okay.
I'm not sure. There might be an embargo as to what's happening. But certainly in the near future, we're stuffed with DC books. So a 50, almost 50-year unbroken run of buying DC books is now broken for me. You know,
that's sad, man.
And we're not an insubstantial part of the market. Back in the day, the discussion was always heard at comic conventions that the UK kept Vertigo going because we bought those kind of books in this country.
Yeah.
So I think, and there's a lot of like loyal comic fans over here, who just like suddenly they've decided they're not going to distribute to the UK. Yeah,
I'd like to think they're trying to source a supplier or a distributor for that.
Yeah,
I would like to think
they'd do that before they'd pull out, though. Do you know what I mean? That's the thing. I mean, I hope so, dude. And that's
it. It might have to be in their like business wise. They might have had to sign a contract to say, "Well, if we're going to do this, you've got to do it for X amount of time." Or Diamond said, "If we do this, we've got to do the US as well," or something. There might have been like a bunch of technicalities that
they didn't
want to go with. I mean, for me, Diamond, I think the massive ignorance here, but I think they really shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah, I think so. And they have had that stranglehold, and I know everyone moans about their practices.
Yeah.
Certainly speaking, as someone who works at a comic company, they're very difficult to deal with in relation to getting your advert in the right bit of the book, no matter what you pay.
Yeah.
There's a bit of that going in the previews. But the further kink to that story is that I was watching a live stream with a number of professionals on just the other night, a bit of dog insomnia. So I thought I'd put one of these sort of live streams on. I'm not a regular watcher of that sort of thing. In fact, it took me about 10 minutes to remember my password. But on that, someone was saying that there is a rumor circulating that Marvel are about to buy Diamond.
Okay, that'd be interesting then, because that'd be
explain it.
Well, yeah, that would explain everything.
I don't know how true that is, and he said this, it's not a reliable rumor. It's just something I've heard a couple of times. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. Yeah, but DC Comics have definitely left the UK comics party. You know,
I didn't think Marvel were doing too healthy at the moment.
No, it's a weird one, isn't it?
Same with Disney. I didn't think they were doing like money wise. Obviously, with everything going on in the world, they wouldn't be making big expenditures to buy companies like that.
So yeah. DC are owned by, is it Time Warner?
Time Warner.
And Time Warner are now owned by, is it AT&T?
Okay.
Now, AT&T are a phone and internet provider.
Mm.
Is there, so the other conspiracy theory is, and this sounds like a conspiracy theory, is that are we being pushed into digital only floppies?
Mm.
Because they are a company that deals in the internet.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's very tricky to kind
Yeah,
of.
that's a that was I read that online by someone particularly unreliable the other day, so I just thought put it out as an idea rather than.
Trouble is, we've got so little facts that we're essentially just grasping at straws. We don't know what's
Yeah, we
going
do.
on.
Yeah,
So
completely.
that's the problem with it, though, isn't
But
it? Like the
frankly,
fact that.
could they have chosen a, perhaps an easier time to do the transition when there weren't actually any comics coming out? In somewhere there's a brewery where they're trying to figure out how to fucking pour a pot of lager, isn't there? You know, so.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. Yeah, I guess there's so many factors going on that
Yeah.
a fuck knows. I feel like then of the everyone was kind of a bit begrudgingly using Diamond
Yeah.
and they just got pushed a little bit too far where it's like, no, it ain't fucking worth doing this.
Yeah.
We'll just set
Well,
up our own fucking company.
I'm with this comic toolbox. It was like a doorstep delivery thing, you know, postage delivery thing. And they have told me that Diamond won't deliver to Orbital because Orbital haven't paid them. So, I mean, they put it in an email to me. Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's a huge secret, but the there's obviously issues with. I don't know. Is the UK comic book shop scene big enough now? You know, there's a chance it isn't, isn't there? You know.
That's terrible. I mean, if you get all the DC titles pulling out, and then you only get Marvel,
Yeah.
there's the lack of competition there, which doesn't really help
Yeah.
shops because Marvel can say, well, you've got to take X amount of
Yeah.
She-Hulk and Miss Marvel, or whatever title they
Or
want
we
to
won't.
push,
Yeah, you won't get
or you
Avengers or
won't
something.
get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like,
Yeah.
oh, fuck.
I really don't know what's going to happen with comics in the UK
Yeah.
at the moment. It's so. I mean, if things weren't uncertain enough as it is anyway, because of everything, it's just. I mean, we really hope that like the indie shops out there are okay and you know still gonna do what they can
God,
to,
yeah.
because obviously this is a, I mean DC's one of the big ones.
Oh man, I
It's.
want. I'm desperate for the comic shops to survive. I live in a thriving metropolis where there should be, you know, 20 comic shops, and there's what, four or five who are worth going to, you know?
And you know, even if it's just people that only buy Batman books, only buy Superman books, only buy Wonder Woman books, that's you know, that's great. They're buying comic books, but if that's all they're buying and now they can't get them anywhere, these people will just stop.
Yeah, they'll see it as a dropping off point. They'll see it as a jumping off point, as they call it, don't they? As if COVID hasn't been enough of that, when you actually turn up and they've got this automated system of comic shops saving their books, and they go into the comic shop and say, "Oh, have you got my issue of Batman or Justice League?" And they say, "Well, no, we're DC aren't selling us comics anymore." And they're like, "Oh, yeah."
That's me done then. It's like, do I need more fucking hassles of trying to work out how I'm going to get Detective Comics 537 or whatever? So I'll just fucking knock it on the head.
I
Wasn't
think
that
we
was
could.
one of you guys mentioned about the fact that like getting new readers is like the fucking toughest thing? It's so much easier to keep the readers on board rather than lose them and try and gain them back. And this whole thing is like obviously a massive exercise in fucking losing readers.
I mean, I think where the difference is here, and the readers that we're talking about aren't readers that listen to this show, because I find with the independent comics community and like you know people that go to Comic Cons who are there just or anyone who goes to Thought Bubble, for instance, they're there to buy books. And if they like a creator, they'll come back to that table and they'll support those creators. They'll come back for issue two, issue three, issue four, whatever. But that's when it's a different kind of book. Those bigger numbers, the bigger titles and stuff. Much as we love them in their own right, but those are definitely more for the mass market as well. They're the ones that you Joe Public who you know we don't understand because they're normal human beings. You know they if they're going to read comics, they'll go to one of those companies probably more than an independent book because they'll have an idea, they'll have a recognition of a Spider-Man or they'll have a you know recognition of this.
So Phil McFarlane, 200th alumni, he said, "Well, I'll go to trades, but I'm not sure. Don't the trades come in through Diamond as well?
Yeah, I
In the
don't know
most
how that works.
part, I know
Yeah.
probably they come in elsewhere to bookshops and stuff,
Yeah,
but."
so sometimes certain you there's some publishers that reprint stuff, isn't it, in the
Yeah,
UK?
like Hachette or someone like that. Yeah,
Or
and I
but
know
do
our books are.
Panini do a fair bit as well, don't they? But that's
Yeah,
Marvel,
that's
isn't
true.
it? Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, our books get distributed by Diamond and by a couple of other people, so you won't miss out on a no-brow book because We've got other distributors, but I don't think the case is that's the case for UK for DC, you know.
Why wouldn't you just not have like a printer in the UK and print and distribute it?
Yeah, you think so?
From
you? You
source,
think mix them and bite their hands off around that. I would suggest.
Yeah, I don't understand like why you've got to pay so much for the fucking shipping when you can just literally send the digital files for nothing and then just get them printed in the country of.
I mean, do you think comics will go print on demand soon? You know, do you think it will be a lot more will go print on demand and move to trades possibly and digital? You know. But even trade sales are dropping off a bit. It's graphic novels are selling, but trades are not, you know.
Yeah. I'm buying lots of trades and graphic novels now. I'm not buying any
copies. Yeah. And I think in some ways...
Apart from small press. Sorry.
Well, yeah. I'm exactly the same, Dan. You know, I'm exactly the same. And I do love to double dip on the small press if I can. But I think we could see a future of your comic book shop not necessarily being a comic book shop, more like a... I mean, comic book flavored bookstore of some kind, where you know it's predominantly graphic novels and trades and stuff, and you have a small section in the back. You know, maybe if it's slightly bigger, you'll have some back issues and things like that. The market's definitely changing and evolving, as markets always have.
Of course, yeah.
But I think certainly from the retail side, things like this are just a massive they're a massive blow for readers. They're also, unfortunately, they're just they're a massive sign for the people that don't necessarily care about the medium. You know, when it just comes to the numbers and they're like, well, okay, we won't get them, so we won't bother with this anymore. You know,
it's a massive kick in the guts for me. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah,
I mean, a third of my purchases every month of DC. Mm. We had, you know, the implosion of Orbital and nobody really telling the truth about what's going on there. And then we had the cancellation of all UK conventions and comic marts and comic shops because of closures of comic shops because of the COVID. And then you hear about comic shops actually closing. I sent a message to Orbital that took them to a week to reply, and they replied, I think last Wednesday or something, to say, oh, there'll be some news coming soon. Well, really? I'm living in doubt around that one.
Yeah, don't hold your breath there.
Yeah, it's and now DC are pulling out of the United Kingdom. It man, they're killing the fucking hobby.
Yeah, it's really killing it, taking it out of the knees.
Yeah,
it'd be good for like somewhere like the Europe comics and the European stuff to get their comics into Britain and through bookshops or whatever. I know they wouldn't probably sell them in specialist comic book stores, but
in 47 years, it hasn't been a month where I haven't read a Batman comic.
Yeah.
I mean, saying that, Tony, are you going to switch to digital?
I'll have to, man. Yeah, I'll have to.
So you'll still get your DC fix. It will just be a different format.
I know, but you know my interesting.
Your commitment to one day die under a pile of comic books you haven't read.
You do want the comics though. If you've got my fucking hundreds of issues.
I put this on. I'm on a forum, a comics forum with a load of sort of big roller collectors the other day, and I put it on there and I said, look, how do you feel about this? Do you feel that you own comics that are on Comixology? And a lot of, I mean, as you well know, I have a book that I tick it all off in and a computer program and all that sort of thing. If I have it purely on digital, I don't feel like I own it, and it just out of pure instinct, I don't tick it off in this book that I own it.
And we've seen that recently.
We saw that with Alterna Comics, didn't we? I noticed it recently that Alterna had pulled a load of their comics from Comixology. I checked on my app and they're still on there. But that's a fluke. You know, I fully expected them to have been gone.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Because then it's not, you're not buying the comic, you're buying the rights to read it.
Yeah.
So like that can be withdrawn at any time. And that has happened on Amazon to people with their Kindles.
Yeah. And no matter, I know it's not much these days, on the occasion it is, but not much. So there's a resale value to comics.
Yeah.
You know, there's even just passing them on to my son. There's a, you know, way to, you know.
There's a value to them.
Yeah. There is a value to them.
Do you think, like, as cultural icons, some of the characters that DC have built up, would they still have their cultural relevance in, say, 10 years if they got robbed, taken out the knees of the comic thing? So say, like, DC said, we're not going to do any Batman comics.
Yeah.
Do you think Batman would be able to carry on?
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? Well, they've announced that Affleck might be coming back, haven't they, this week, and Cavill might be coming back. So they're... the superhero movie zeitgeist will fall away at some point. It's just the nature of the world, isn't it?
I think we're, if not at that point, gone past it, or it's soon, because
it's just on the downward spiral.
That lull of the Marvel films not coming out, and then they pushed the Black Widow one back, just like it just there was that massive hype and then Endgame, and then it's kind of just gone like a balloon.
Tell you what, though, deflated. Thank God we got Stargirl. What an amazing series that looks.
They totally cancelled that the Batwoman show. Like, they've completely written out the character, Kate Kane.
They've cancelled it, have they?
It's cancelled. Like, they're gonna, if they're doing a second series, they've
won in a new character.
They won a new character straight away because the lead actress walked away from it.
All right, okay. Yeah, that was a weird
one. I thought I watched any of that.
Yeah. No, I didn't think much of it's been on TV. I watched her in the Crisis crossover and wasn't overly impressed with her acting ability. I've got to be honest here. Mind you, it's in a series. It's in a, you know, the Arrowverse. It's not high Shakespeare, is it? Let's face
No,
even within that, it was a bit dodge.
Yeah, but... Yeah. Oh, you know, fair play to that universe. It's got lots of fans, and they do it.
Guilty pleasure.
Yeah, yeah, and you know what? It does more. It uses more comic book ideas than. I mean, yeah, it may not be for everyone's taste, but fucking hell, some of these shows are like, right, let's use this comic book villain. Let's use this character.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking, fucking hell, a TV show has managed to cross over all of these things.
Yeah,
no. If I was a little kid, this would have blown my fucking mind.
I watched about 3 or 4 seasons of The Flash, and then it was to the point where fucking everyone in the cast has got superpowers. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
But like, they had Gorilla Grodd going in Flash, going to Gorilla City. I was like,
amazing. Yeah.
This is fucking great. You wouldn't get this.
Also, the effects on Gorilla Grodd were really good, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't have that massive shark dude as well.
Yeah.
So I was like, it's 10 out of 10 for trying.
It's like the equivalent of a Saturday morning, what do you call it? You know, they used to have like Flash Gordon and stuff.
It's cereals.
That's it. That's the word I think. And it is. I watch it in chunks, and I know I watch them all. But I haven't watched any Black Lightning yet. I haven't got around to that one yet. But I do want to see it because he was really good in that crossover one. But it's got a little bit of spirit.
I've heard that show's really good. Yeah.
But there you go.
Interesting. Well, we're going to have to see how it all plays out.
Come on, DC. You know what I mean? It's like. Marvel and DC, and to be fair, let's face it, Marvel were kind of following DC. DC were there first, weren't they, really? You know, it's like, come, we need Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman in our comic shops. You know, what's wrong with you?
It doesn't seem like the same if it's not there.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It's the big two. And it is strange, these kind of past couple of months have really kind of shook up a lot, which I thought was kind of like set in stone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's lots of kind of pillars that I thought had not even considered that changing in any way. And then now it's fucking, they're in dust.
I mean, it is a shame that they lost Dan DiDio, because having, you know, spoken to him, albeit briefly, and gone to a number of his talks in New York and stuff, he was a geezer who properly loves comics.
Yeah.
You know, he really loved them. You know, even in his, if you're on Facebook in his friends list, all he does is show the old school comics that he's bagging up that day and what the movie is. He's done this like a period of doing that. You know, it's lovely. I love watching it. Well, we've still got Jim Lee who's selling his rucksack. So if you want a rucksack, go to www.jimlee.rucksack.com. Yeah.
I'll pass on that. That said, if he does bring out that fucking black and white, was it black and white Wildcats or something? No, X-Men. X-Men.
All right.
Like the artwork from that, like in Super Size. I was like, oh, that sounds interesting.
Oh, yeah. Like one of those master ones. Yeah. Ah, cool.
Should we swing this round to the topic for tonight's show?
Yes.
Which is about craft.
Yes, we were. Yeah, we were. As well as we knew, we were going to talk about the whole DC thing, but we just wanted to talk a little bit about writing, but namely, when
writing for other people.
Which obviously Tony has the most experience in, and so many writers listening to this.
Yeah,
you do it all the time. Then
you've done it recently, haven't you?
Yeah, and I've just done it recently. Dan, I know you've got irons in the fire somewhere, haven't you?
Yeah, I've not. I can't recall when me writing for someone else. Someone years ago asked me if they could have the script to one of the Vanguards because they said they'd like to give it a go, trying to draw it in their own style. And I said, I don't know. I'd have to rework the script so much because it's written for me.
Like reverse engineer it almost.
So, well, you guys can take it. When you tell us quickly about the titles, you just briefly tell us about the titles you just put out as a way of kind of going through it.
Let's go full on MI666 because I read this yesterday. And Vince, I still haven't received my copy yet. I ordered it 25 hours ago.
Yes, well, MI666, the book that I wrote and co-created with Andy Bloor. I mean, it's Andy Bloor's his original idea, and he came to me and sort of said, you know, well, you know, I've got these titles, you know, do you want to work together? And I was like, yeah, man, I you know, because I was itching to write for someone else, you know, to try out that experiment, because normally I can only write for myself, because it's just mindless dribble. But I always wanted to write for other people, especially, like, you know, to see if, you know, a beginning, middle, and end, try and get it to work. So we're, after going backwards and forwards on some ideas, MI666 came up, which is still the best name ever.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. It's fucking great.
And
it's a banger.
Yeah, and knowing that Andy has obviously worked with other writers before as well, on shorts and like the Wolfmen and all of that, there was a little, I guess there was a little bit of pressure that I put on myself as well, because you always think when you're writing for someone else, when you hand that script over, do you, I mean Tony, you've, what do you think when you send a script to an artist for the first time? Do you think, well, what are they going to make of this?
Interesting. It depends on the circumstances, whether it's something we've discussed previously, mm-hmm. or if I've just approached them with an old project, or if it's someone I've never worked with before. It tends to be a bit different. So if someone I've never worked with before and I want to get the idea across, I'll send a pitch document with images on, like, you know, just pictures of people or,
yeah,
you know, that sort of thing attached to it, or just a sort of more detailed page. Of just text about, oh, this is what I think it's going to be like, this is the kind of tone, this is kind of the quant. So when we did Cockney Kung Fu, I sent a picture of, who's the actress I based it on again, I forget her name,
Carolyn Monroe.
Yeah, I sent some pictures of her in sort of, you know, sort of groovy 70s clothes and stuff like that as an idea to fucking hell, my brain's gone,
Nick,
fucking hell, Nick. Sorry, mate. Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Sorry. Yeah. They sent it to Nick and he was sort of on board, and he got the tone, and then the script sort of took off after that. But sometimes, especially for short stuff for anthologies, it tends to be all in there anyway.
Mm.
You know, if it's a four pager, it tends to be, I don't write super, I'm not like Alan Moore or anything, but I do include conversational suggestions and descriptions and what I kind of want to do. To people within the body of the script. So it depends, man. It depends what it is, what the project is. Obviously, me and Falpia have got a shorthand for stuff now, and we will discuss things first.
Yeah.
There's in the Atomic Hercules Travels to Uranus, there's a couple of homages. So I know you both got Atomic Herc 2 in front of you. If you go to the first page, that's an Incredible Hulk homage. You know, where he's holding up the Incredible Hulk.
Yes.
Yeah, so I sent a little screenshot of that to while he was working on it to Falpy, and said, look, this is what I fancy this for the, you know, it's a bit of that going on. It depends, man. It depends on who the creator is and how in sync we are. And back in the day when I was doing stuff for Bingo Bonanza, I hadn't met 4 out of 5 artists. I hadn't met them at all. So that was slightly more lengthier. And that was, I think, one of them, I actually posted the script to them.
Wow,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That's old school.
Yeah, yeah. Bit of that. Yeah, all different. Yeah, what about you, V? Did you...
I mean, I'd always wanted to write for other artists and stuff, and I'd put together a couple of pitch documents or whatever, and the pitch documents for artists, if you know what I mean, when I, you know, way before we started this or anything like that, and, you know, I've got some ideas that are now in the drawer, gathering dust. And they were just a couple of, like, short... It wasn't like I didn't write an 80-page graphic novel. It was just like a short 12-page, here's an example of the idea.
Yeah.
And that was a good learning to sort of send to artists. And they were like, you know, and they would say, oh, I really like this. And, you know, it comes across really well. So that gave me a bit more confidence in my own writing. And certainly, like I say, sending stuff to Andy, I was thinking, right, okay, he's drawn for, like, you know, proper writers. So, you know, in terms of the formatting, because I like to write a script. I know some writers can be very exacting in their vision, but also I think if if you're working with an artist and like, and you love their work anyway, it's gonna be like, right, well, here's what this is. Feel free to do what you want with it anyway. You know, if you can change things for the better, if you want to zoom out, zoom in. I don't do anything like camera angles and stuff because
I've had a couple of scripts where people have been like really over the top with that.
Yeah,
and it's like that's one thing under the artist's control. Yeah. If you want to throw in like those occasionally, but when it's every panel,
yeah,
it's like, come on, man. Like, or even like the how many, it said there's not six panels in a page, and right, I want panel five, the biggest. Mm. And so I feel like you're kind of encroaching a bit on the artist's shout out.
Yeah.
Okay. Unless there's a specific reason for it. So if it's,
exactly. If it's like every single page, every single panel, you're telling the artist what to do and stuff. It's like, man, you got to trust your artist a little.
Yeah. I mean, I sometimes like I will put wide panel that takes a, you know, across the length of the top of the page. You know,
I think the layout sometimes is important if you want.
Yeah.
So when, as you're reading down a script, you need to say, look, this is top left because it's going to be a small indent panel that will reflect the small indent panel bottom right. You know, there's I think sometimes that's useful because it plays into the narrative.
Yeah.
But the layout I generally leave to the artist, you know.
I mean, unless there's like a special instruction, like you said, right, I'm going to have, it's going to be four panels, like landscape panels of the page, and it's going to show like a changing of time from like morning to night. Mm. That's, you need that layout. And and if there's a bar, a bottle and a bar that's going to be smashed overhead and it needs to be shown in the previous page, you make a note of that. But if you say, oh, like the bar's got like an ashtray with four cigarettes in it, and
I mean,
glasses.
Writers think visually as well as artists. People have got to remember that. Well, I might not be an accomplished artist. I still think visually. Mm. And one that, if you have a look at Atomic Hercules, there's the page where he's running up the steps. It's the one I sent you through on the...
That's great.
And that was described by me because I just had this sort of visual idea that, you know, I'm open to ideas. You know, if he didn't want to do it, he didn't want to do it, and he could do something else. But we'd have discussed it, definitely, you know.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was a nice little... play, you know, a bit playful, isn't it, you know?
So like that, yeah, it totally works. And like if you as an artist and got that script for you, he's like, well, I totally see what Tony's going for there. And
I think it'll work better as, you know, if we were looking down the steps at people, I'd say, oh, that sounds interesting, you know. Yeah. there's ways to do it, you know.
I think if you have specific details that you want, then, you know, and like you say, if you have an exacting vision about like this table's got to have four books on it or something like that, put it in your script. Because the art that you are.
Oh, and if you suddenly in your script realise that you should have been holding a gun, go back to the panel where he first appeared and say it in that one.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing more to piss an artist off than going, fucking, I drew him and I got to that panel. Because people work in different ways. Some of them will just look at, you know, the page they've got in front of them, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I read through the script a couple of times and then go through and break the page down. Even then, I can make a mistake because, like, I'm working through and I go, oh, fucking hell. He's like. Yeah. Got to be holding this in his hand, and I ain't fucking done it.
Yeah,
that's where Photoshop comes in.
Because also, like, from an artist's perspective, the artist isn't the proofreader. The artist is there to look at it and then go, right, I've got to draw this, I've got to draw this.
Not the editor. Right, man.
So, it's like if you go write for someone else, I think it is a collaboration, and you are, you know, hiring someone else. I know you're hiring someone to do your pages and you're paying them and stuff, but also it is a collaboration. The thing's going to work better if you're both on the same page, pardon the pun. So give them everything they need, and also questions backwards and forwards. I mean, there was with MI666, there was a couple of pages where maybe like a face was in a slightly different position, and you know, Andy's a pro, so he quite easily changed that. But other than that, I didn't really have to edit anything, and like, you know,
that's great.
Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like you fucking smashed it, dude.
Yeah,
there is a different dynamic when you're working collaborating on a comic as opposed to when the writer's paying the artist.
Yeah.
For instance, if I was an artist and someone's paying me to do a comic or a piece of work for them, I'd do what they fucking tell me. You know what I mean? I can say, are you sure about this? If they say, no, I want it like that, that's the way to get it.
Yeah, I think it depends on the writer. I'm even on the jobs where I've paid people, which is quite a few recently, I'm always open, you know, to chat, I think. But yeah, sometimes it's like you send it off, you pay for it, you want it back. And there's a bit of that, isn't there?
Especially with like the independent and self-published stuff. you know, we're not these big publishers. We're not, you know, it's not a job. Do you know what I mean? In bold letters. It's not like, right, you're writing this book, we're giving you this artist. Oh, fair enough, then I'll write my script and send it to them. You know, hopefully it's not as cold as that. But when you're doing
Sometimes they never have any contact between the writer and the artist, don't they? Yeah, exactly.
Bizarre.
But in the indie and self-publishing world, you know, communication backwards and forwards is always the...
You know, there's this hashtag going on about how much you get paid for transparency in publishing or something like that. I was going to write mine and say, oh, yeah, I've just done a load of books. Yeah, I did this and this and this. And I didn't get paid anything because I do it for fun. Let's not forget the fun element.
That's like 90% of my comics.
Yeah, and me.
I made the decision years ago that I don't want to do this for money because I don't think I'd like it.
Yeah,
I don't think I'd enjoy it at all. And it's a fun hobby.
Is it that Johnson quote about never make your hobby your job or something like that, isn't it? Yeah. Because it stops being fun sometimes.
It's weird. There's other one that goes, turn a job into something you love or something you love into a job and you'll never work a day again in your life.
Yeah.
It's hard. There's conflicting quotes, but I'm very much in the first camp of not doing it as a job because I don't think I'd like it.
The thing I meant to ask you, V, so in your scripts, are they as exacting? And I was wondering about this as I was reading 666. So you use, it's very dark. There's a lot of heavy inks on it. I mean, it's typical of Andy's work to a certain
extent. Yeah.
Did you include that in a tonal? Did you do like a tonal document and say, like, well, this should be, you know, we're in a, you know, almost like a coven environment and, you know, is it this sort of thing? Is it?
I think if it was, maybe if it was another artist, then no. But I'd been a fan of Andy's work for a long time anyway, and going into it, we're on the same page of like, right, this is going to be the tone of the book anyway. I didn't need to send him any visual references, and the story itself is pretty dark and shadowy and stuff. And it was one of those, I'll just write this, and I think he'll be able to put his own spin on it. I mean, there is one
sometimes. That's what you're looking for, isn't it?
Yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah. And there's one character where, they're basically, their shadow is possessed by a demon. That's one of the characters has that. He's constantly followed around by a demon.
Yes, I was going to ask you about the lettering on that actually, because it's almost like scratching on a wall, isn't it? There's a little bit of that going on with it.
And this was an interesting thing as well, because it was the first time that Andy hadn't lettered his own work.
I was going to ask that, because you use different coloured panels. I spoke to Andy in the past because he often uses a transparency in some of his stuff, but I noticed that you've got, for narration you've got, or word panels you've got a black background, and for speech you've got a white background.
For the speech there was a white background, and for the narration the black. I just thought with the tone of the book, the sort of black background was a little bit more fitting. I used more of a typewriter like font if it was more of a file type, you know, like the name badge, because there's like name badges type stuff as well.
We've talked a bit about that recently, haven't we, with the space warp stuff.
And thinking about the fonts for like character language and stuff, you know, there's the standard speech. I didn't want to have every character having a different font. That's insanity.
A pain.
Yeah, and it makes the reading irregular.
Yeah, you know? And certainly like with this demonic voice, it's a slightly different font, but it's still readable. I still wanted the whole thing to be clear, because also it is on a black background and it's not white text on a black background. And
well, you make that's part of the narrative. The style of lettering in that is part of the story, isn't it?
Yeah,
really.
Because
you can visually see what's going on without someone having to tell you, oh, he's got this going on with him, you know.
Because it has to be, you have to get across the idea that he's the only one that can hear this. That's the whole point of it. It's not for anyone else, it's like a whisper. So that was an interesting sort of challenge as well. But Andy, Andy loves his blacks. And if anyone's seen his original pages, he will have inked everything you see. He doesn't do a shortcut on Photoshop.
No.
So at some point, you know,
the ink was about $4,000 for this book. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, the original pages are going to look bloody dynamite, I'm sure. And so, those sort of things, when it came to the tone of the book, I didn't have to worry. I knew, and I think with writers, surely for me personally, I think, well, if you know who you're going to work with, or if you're a writer who's definitely sought out to write for someone, for a particular artist, you're going to write something for them. if that makes sense.
For the art style.
Yeah, because mine and Andy's sort of collaboration just, you know, it was like, you know, liked each other's works, became friends, and then the mutual collaboration just sort of came about, and that's how this book came about. But certainly, if I'm going to another artist, and it certainly gave me a bit of confidence to, you know, because this is the first book as well that is out in the open that I've just written for someone else. So, you know, there's those nerves thinking, oh, God. But if, you know, and there are artists I want to write things for, but I'm going to write something that their style will suit and will, or if it's something that they haven't done before and I think they'd be able to bring a good flavour to it, then there'd be even more communication from me to see if, you know, we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Rather than just, I like your art, I have this story, I'd like you to draw it. Sometimes you do see a lot of comics where you just think, well, this art doesn't really fit this story.
No, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And I think it's great. If you love artists and you want them to write your book, then go ahead. It's your money. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, if you've got a... that may, by having like this brilliant artist do a book that isn't necessarily in a style, the art may drown out your writing as well. Because everyone's just going to look at the art and go, oh, this is brilliant. They haven't done anything like this before. This is wonderful. How many people are actually talking about the story? So there is a backwards and forwards and thinking about who you're writing for. I'm going to write lots of different things. I mean, people are used to me writing sort of funny stuff or, you know, having something with the humour or like Saturday morning kids cartoon, whereas this is darker, but I can't seem to get rid of like the sort of the tone of my writing.
Well, that's fine. That's your voice, man. That's fine. When Ken lettered a comic for me the other day, and he said it's another Tony Esmond cut, and I thought, oh yeah, it is, because it's just, we all have these voices to what we write, don't we? Because we don't have to apply ourselves to writing for a fucking, you know, the next Incredibles movie comic that's come out, you know, or something like that. We write what we want to write, and it's that,
often, your voice sings out of both of your comics completely.
Yeah.
I was like about a third of the way into my 666, and I was like, this is Vince wrote this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I almost could say this is Vince without a beard writing this. It's felt like, felt that.
No, I almost had more of a beard. It was, I don't know how you think about when you're writing for other people and the concept of the book as well, because obviously the book say how many times are we going to say it in this episode, but the book itself is a sort of teen book, but also when I came to it, I wanted to create a teen book that was older people. It wasn't the beautiful young people against the demonic forces. It isn't, you know, the grizzled drunk against the forces, because let's face it, if you're doing that, you've probably read quite a lot of Hellblazer.
We need to avoid the cliche with that sort of, especially with that sort of horror trope. There's too much of that going on, isn't there? Yeah.
Don't try and do what other people have done better. It's just a fucking waste of time.
Yeah. Whereas I think just a little spin of like, all right, here's the sort of trope that you know, and here's the spin on it. Do you know what I mean? Like, what if they're a bunch of like, I mean, I call them grizzled veterans in like the marketing blurb, but you know, they're older people. You know, I think the guy that's with the glasses, he's the younger one, but they're all supposed to be, you know, they'd be veteran actors if you're going
to. They've done their time in the trenches.
Yeah. And that's the whole point of it. So I quite like writing stuff like that that isn't the norm. Like one of the comic book stories that I always wanted to write, and like I'd written loads of notes for, and I'd attempted scripts, and this was for something else as well. And I know a film's about to come out, and I know Greg Rucker wrote it and stuff. I think it was Greg Rucker, but I had the name Old Guard, the Old Guard, right before this book was printed, and the book, and of course, then that comic book comes out, and I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, I can't write that now, can I? But mine was about superheroes in like an old people's. It was like a superhero old people's home sort of thing.
And it
was quite fun. It was very different from obviously the big budget one. But you know, but that was also when I was writing that, I was thinking, oh God, this artist would be great for this, or this artist would be great for this. So there's always, I think when you're writing, you have to have a view to how it's going to look anyway.
Yeah, you get a shortcut as well. You know Andy quite well, and you know, we we tabled next to him and stuff, don't we, from conventions.
Yeah.
And I think the same can be said of me writing for you for Monster Spots Club. We've got a shorthand of even humour that we laugh at things.
Yeah.
You know, so when I write My Bum Is On Fire, I know exactly how you're going to draw it. You know?
Yeah, you only get the question, is this the script, or are you just saying this in general?
Yeah, no. Yeah. time we lighted our farts in our hotel room in Cheltenham. But the, there is that to it. You and I have got a shorthand, and you'll have the same with Andy. Mm. Yeah.
I think as well, there was a shorthand, but also I did write like descriptions of panels and stuff.
So you broke it down to page and panel, didn't you?
Yeah, but it was still. But that's not to say I didn't Alan Moore the whole thing. There's not if it was a close up on someone's face, I didn't talk about that they were thinking about that packet of crisps they ate in 1983, that kind of thing. it would just literally be focus on this person. They look troubled. That kind of thing. It was just those sort of emotional beats. If someone had to have a sort of a look, an expression on their face, then I'd point that out. But if I just wanted them to look badass, you'd probably say.
Did anything come out of your script that you hadn't written, or that you had written in a different way that surprised you from this?
One thing that did surprise me. The script it was longer to begin with. The comic book was longer, and then we've talked about like self-editing and tightening things before.
Yeah,
and this was definitely a case of I think I wrote like a 28-page or 30-page script or something. I can't remember what it was now. And Andy was like, "Oh, I think let's try and get the book down to this length." And my first thought was, "Oh, but my baby, I can't edit my baby. It's perfect how it is. You know, I've got a double page splash here. I've done this.
Just smash things up and shout him down the phone.
Yeah.
with mail kind of way.
Yeah, I basically went away to my retreat in the middle of the Navajo desert and just had to think about it for a couple of months. No, but by doing that sort of edit and chopping those pages down, I'm so much more pleased and how it's tighter. Do you know what I mean? You're really forced to look at, oh, you know, if you think your script has no fat on it, yes, it has fat on it. There's going to be something somewhere that you don't need. And, you know, and it's something maybe that I should take into my own work a little bit more. You know, if when I say my own work, you know, when I'm writing for myself, because there is no, you know, there's no editor or there's no collaborator sort of saying, oh, can we just tighten this a bit? I think it's a lot harder when you're writing and drawing for yourself to be objective about it sometimes. Do you ever find that, Dan? Do you ever look back on some of your older stuff and just think, oh, I could have tightened that up a little bit more?
Yeah, there's a couple of times. There's one, two pages in the first couple of issues of Vanguard, which I go back for. I wish I'd just chopped that out because I was unsure of myself and I added a few pages to over-explain things and I didn't need it. Mm. But all the time there, I was constantly cutting stuff out and think, can this all get on a page? And then think, no, I can't. I have to take that to two or...
So you're
just,
all about maximizing the page now with what
you're doing. Just absolutely get as much on as you can and have as few, just keep it fast all the time, like moving. And it depends on the comic you're doing. I mean, if you're doing Kingdom by John McNaught, that's all about the time and the space. Whereas if you're kind of doing a fast paced superhero comic,
you
need to be absolutely fucking brutal.
Which means, though, when you choose to have that quiet moment, it's like any good comedy. The best comedies have the best emotional moments because you're with it, and then all of a sudden they can really hit you in the heart with something that's far more emotional than most dramas could never touch. Which means that when you do have a quiet moment, you could have like just one page of just complete calmness. That will have so much impact.
I mean, that's a sign of a good writer, I think. We were talking about this yesterday with Airboy, and there's a moment where, I don't know if you remember it, where he sees himself in the other reality and dead in a morgue, and he has this like real, and it's been crazy all the way through until that moment, and you get this apt of humour, of sex, of violence, of drugs, you know, and you get that one single oasis right in the middle of the comic where he has this sort of self-revelation that he's been a proper wanker for the whole of his, you know, for the recent years of his life. And And then the following panel is like back to Nobbs again. But he does it so well. It doesn't, it's not jarring. You know, I think
no, it works.
To be able to set that up and develop people and to know the pacing and to know how a comic works and the page turn works and to be able to do that is so good. Yeah.
I mean, the pacing is ultra, ultra important, isn't it?
God, yeah.
With everything. And certainly every issue is a massive learning experience. And certainly me and Andy are starting to throw ideas about for another sort of idea. I mean, another thing to this as well, it's almost a one and done. Do you know what I mean?
I thought it was a continuing.
There are other stories.
There's a little bit of a hang at the end.
A little bit of a sort of cliffhanger, but to a bigger world rather than, you know, oh no,
this is what's going to happen next.
They're not hanging off the cliff to be continued. It's more of a, this little case is done. Join us next time for the next one. That sort of thing.
Right.
And by doing that, it will build up a bigger world. And, you know, we know what the bigger sort of, the villain of the piece, as it were, you know, the big enemy. But you can.
I'm just trying to think, you know how some married couples join their surnames together? So you got Blore and Hunt.
Mm.
Well, maybe you could be Whore.
Yeah. Or Blunt.
Blunt.
Blunt. Yeah. Blunt. Bring it on.
Blunt Comics.
Blunt Comics. Yes.
Pass the blunt.
Yeah. Job done.
Just a massive joint as the logo.
Yeah. Logo damn well.
Yeah.
Corporate don't like it.
All about whore blunts. Whore blunts. That's good.
Or blunt whores.
Just use that picture you did for the Whore Chronicles and put a big joint in her mouth.
I don't want to disturb people anymore.
We were going to be in a comic ourselves soon. All of us worked together in The Spark.
Oh, yeah. It's coming soon.
Issue 3. Yeah.
I've been working on that this week. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, I've written the intro page and all that sort of thing. And there might be a little bit more of Springworth coming. Just watch this space.
Ah, fantastic. Hey.
So, in terms of writing for someone else as well, that's an that's an even more interesting project.
So many moving parts in that one. Then.
Yeah, because that's not a straight-up narrative sort of story, is it? That's... You know, how did that process kind of work?
What, the Springworth thing?
Yeah.
It's kind of backwards. You have to kind of work from what you have to kind of almost get the idea and then write the story backwards to work out what they have and haven't seen. Because as for those who haven't seen it, as you go along, kids draw sections of it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the bits the kids draw sections of, you can't have repeated because the kids don't want to draw the same thing again. So we had to kind of work backwards. So it was Andy who came up with the idea, well, the monster is drawn by the kids in midway through the comic. And obviously Punchy beats the monster up with the two kids. But because we hadn't seen the monster, Andy come up with the idea, well, he has a tea party with the monster at the end. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we put the monster in bandages so you couldn't see him. So it's genius. It's like a real sort of jigsaw one, that is, you know, really difficult.
Yeah, it's really tricky. There's kind of like the concept, and then the story has to be built around the concept.
So the kids drew the sort of robot missile, and then rather than seeing the robot missile in the explosion, there's an explosion that covers it up, and we had other things flying out of the panel that the kids could draw as well. It was quite a confusing one. It was a head scratcher sitting there with it, you know, all the various pages and points written out in a notebook, you know.
Yeah, trying to get the mechanics of it.
Yeah. And the design in that was the main thing. You know, what everything looked like. Andy really did well on that one. That's just amazing stuff, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, that whole book's a stand-up piece of work.
Really, and it's been a really nice selling book as well. I'm really pleased. It's sold well for them and, you know, it's good.
Real.
Yeah, good stuff. And Andy and I do it free because we just love it. And we're just a little bit of a small adventure on Springworth has just begun. And you guys saw the cover that Andy's done.
For yes.
One of the, yeah.
Which we've revealed, which is fucking amazing.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
We're all working. I mean, Aaron's doing hard work on the Spark, and we're on that WhatsApp group, and everyone else is fucking pouring their hearts and souls into doing this.
Yeah, everyone's doing well. And it's it's about 72% on Kickstarter at the moment.
Ah, brilliant.
20 days, something like that. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, how many days have you got left?
I'll have a keep talking. I'll have a look. We're about the third through, I think.
I mean, writing. Certainly, we've talked about kids' comics, you know, quite a bit so far this year. But I think also writing that kind of collaborating on an
79%. Sorry to interrupt. 79%.
Nice. Let's get it over 100 and
23 days to go. So we'll get there, but we could do some help. Yeah.
Writing an all ages book for someone else is also a bit of a challenge. I think it's more of a challenge for me than sort of saying, yes, just do this demonic entity, or this zombie comes back to life. You know, do you know what I mean? That yeah. kind of thing. Because, I mean, so what were the challenges? I know we've got a bit. I know we've got a bit of a shorthand, but certainly, Monster Spotters Club had a few evolutions and things, didn't it?
It was, you came up with a few designs, didn't you? Because it was your idea to put one of the characters from a representational point of view. And I'll tell you what it continued from, and I'm glad we did it. It's from, do you remember Andy Clift's episode where he talked about the representation of disabled people in comics? And it was a real, really interesting talk. Still one of my favourite episodes ever. And you put one of the kids in a wheelchair, and I think it's brilliant.
It's actually a topic that's very close to my heart for my own sort of personal reasons and stuff. So, yeah, and to have that, you know, it was... It was something that I've noticed people notice. I didn't think people were going to notice it because I can't believe I'm going to say this. I'm gonna shout out to my mum on.
Oh, nice! On this, there you go. Episode. I know she's a listener.
So I fucking hope not. Let's just shake her head at me. When I showed her like the spark and stuff, and she was looking through it, and you know she loved it for the kids and stuff, and then and I was like, look, mum, I did that one. And she looked through and she read it and she went,
well done.
She said, you know, whose idea was it to have one of them in a wheelchair? And I was like, well,
oh, nice.
I thought that was good. And, you know, I think she was quite proud of me in our kind of way. But I hope that people noticed that as well. I never thought about it when we were doing, I just thought that, you know, this would be good. And I think there should
it
be.
It fits the story because they come up with like cunning ways to get out of problems and having a sort of, it's like a science fiction hover chair, isn't it? Sort of thing. It has like little compartments and stuff we can always get stuff out of and use. And it kind of works for the story as well, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think when the story originally came up as well, they weren't going to be all aliens either, were they? I think
you're right.
I think they were just sort of astronaut kids.
There's been a lot of chemicals under the bridge since then, mate, my friend. You know?
And I was like, everyone should be just like pink and blue and orange. But that must have been... I mean, what were you thinking when you... what were you thinking, Tony? No, when you do those scripts, because they're just one and done page scripts, but there's a pacing thing you got to think about. That's a very, and also like working on a one page script for someone else. What is that like?
So it's got to have a setup, a middle bit, and a payoff. And we've even included, we've gone, because we're, you know, crazy, we put an actual catchphrase in the end of it, you know, which we've got to try and include every time. It's not an easy one. It tends to be one I think about more than I think about other pages I do in longer form comics, because you have to, like you say, you have to have everything in there and you can't overwrite it either. We always seem to have one bigger panel towards the bottom of the page, don't we, where the big thing happens, like the time they get burped out of the huge monster fish and this sort of thing, you know. So it's that.
It's very highbrow, kids. It's very highbrow.
Yeah. It's burps, farts, you know it, isn't it? Yeah. I think that's what kids find funny. We've had some great feedback about that's the favourite bit from, you know, we gave some out to the NHS in the local hospitals up here for the nurses who had kids to keep them occupied at home. We gave Springworth and Sparks out, which was really nice. And I got some lovely feedback from some of the families and stuff to say that they really like Monster Spotters Club, which is lovely. You know,
that was the one that was liked.
I know they liked it all, but that was one of the favorites, you know?
Yeah.
And I think because it's got that brought, kids laugh at shit like that. Do you know, there's nothing wrong with a kid laughing at someone doing a burp. There's nothing wrong at all with that, is it? You know, and kids laugh at that. And the idea of a comic is you want to amuse the kids.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing. You know, that's the idea.
I think it is also, it can be quite important to, you know, have the inclusion with sort of all ages books as well, you know, because like we say, back to the disability, one of them is disabled, but they're more able than the grown up. And kids are the ones that are going to be reading this. Yeah.
I mean, that's classic Beano. The parents are the adults are often the idiots.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going with that. That's classic. Yeah. But also, they're not just idiots. They're idiots who think they're right all the time, which just plays into kids' sense of humour, you know?
Yeah. So hopefully kids, you know, will, you know, read that and, you know, they won't see any sort of disability or, race, or, you know, it's all aliens.
I certainly don't think of it when I'm writing. I just accept them for the characters that are sitting in my head, ready to back that story, you know?
And at the end of the day, hopefully the kids are entertained by someone going, my bum is on fire.
Are you not entertained?
It made me laugh.
It did make me.
Then I had to draw the artwork, which...
You're the fault, because when we did the burp, you said to me, you rang me or something. You said, I thought it was going to be a fart, and I actually spent days thinking, should we make that a fart? Should we? You know, things you think about. You know,
days, absolute days thinking about that. The thing is, you can never trust a fart, though, can you? Do you know what I mean?
Can't know. No. Yeah,
especially
not my age.
Especially as you get older.
Something you'll know something shortly about, Vince.
All right.
Yes.
Rolling around.
Oh, I've got a countdown on my phone. I'm going to check it now. Check to see how long it's going to be until I see Vincenzo. Is my little countdown on my phone. Yes. Very exciting.
He does genuinely have one, folks. He's sent us pictures on the WhatsApp.
12 days, 13 hours, 16 minutes, 12 seconds. I get to see Vincenzo.
Dan,
social distancing does apply.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, totally. Would anyway. You know what we're like. I mean... Dan, you're sort of apart from like the likes of El Marvo or you know other books, you know Project Hoax and things like that. You're very much a one man band kind of like writing artist kind of thing. You must have had the thoughts about writing scripts for someone else at some point, haven't you?
I think maybe I've kind of like thought. Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like a lot of work.
Seems like a lot of work. Have you been aware of what you've been doing for the past few years?
But like it's kind of like often now I think I could do this, and I thought but like when are you going to do that? Because you've been fucking loads of stuff. I had an idea for like a kind of doing a video series that the three of us could kind of contribute towards, but it's like that's a lot of like researching and production stuff to get it all done. I was like, just focus on what you're doing and get that right, as opposed to. Because often I sit down to do drawing and say, oh, fucking hell, I've got to do that for Joe Blogs or something, and I still haven't done it. So, but yeah, it's one of those things I'd love to do it in the future, write for someone.
Yeah.
I think people would do that, man. I think you've got some great writing.
Do you know what? I think you should totally try doing something like that for a potential special that we might do in the future that we've been...
That's a good shout.
The idea has been... has cropped up again.
Yeah. Take a step back from the drawing board and then see where we can get
you'll
to.
You'll never take a stop step.
No, back like on that. On that.
Yeah. I think that would be.
Hand over our duties.
I mean, when we choose to do like awesome comics type stuff, it's a chance to experiment, isn't it? It's a chance to do something different. I mean, I know the next story that I'm going to do to put into an anthology we're going to put out is something very different from, you know, it's not Murder Road 2.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That's what I do in mind. Like, I want to try something different, a different story.
Yeah.
Not just, if there's somewhere you're going to do it, it's going to do it there.
Yeah.
That's one of the great things about doing anthology stuff. You can kind of flex a muscle that you wouldn't ordinarily try. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Indeed. And indeed, we're all about flexing muscles on this show.
Yeah. Popping out the guns.
Yeah. Do you ever
popping out a muscle?
Do you ever pop them out, Tony?
I get a muscle out occasionally, my friend. Cat couldn't scratch it, as they say in... what's that one where all the old people get rejuvenated?
Cocoon,
yeah.
Oh, and Steve Guttenberg.
Cat couldn't scratch it.
Oh, my word.
I've not heard of that phrase before. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's quite good.
Anytime you're going to mention Steve Guttenberg, what a day. What a day to be alive.
Is he still alive, Steve Guttenberg?
He's still alive.
I think so, yeah.
I'd love to get him on the show.
Wouldn't you? Goots, if you're there, give us an email at awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
James McCulloch's been like doing this thing where he's posting up all these films.
Oh yeah, I really enjoyed them.
Fucking great.
There's loads I haven't known that I must look out. Yeah, I must get Solar Warriors.
What's he been doing?
I downloaded Solar Warriors the other day and rewatched it.
Okay.
And I was like, I don't know, it's an odd. It's kind of very 80s post-apocalyptic sci-fi. It was fun to watch. I used to love it as a kid.
You're right, okay. Yeah, I like all that sort of thing.
He posted up Ghostbusters, and I found out a Ghostbusters fact the other day, which I found quite interesting.
Lay it on us.
The phrase, your toast, comes from Ghostbusters.
Oh,
Bill Murray's line. says like this bitch is toast or whatever. That was the first time, like, not time and ever, but like they're using that film and that popularized that phrase.
Okay.
Bloody hell. Yeah.
There you go.
Is it the word grotty? You know, that's a bit grotty.
Yeah.
That was, I think the Beatles invented that. And is it Hard Day's Night, I think, is where they say it first.
Ah, really? Okay. Yeah,
it's weird, isn't it? Is it entomology? Is that the name of word thing?
That's the word, yeah. I do like that whole subject, entomology.
Yeah, yeah.
Origins of words.
Bloody hell. I mean, there's a revelation. Are there
Back
anyone
to the
that,
boobs.
Anyone that's been privy to Dan's sort of thesaurus that he occasionally busts out
yeah, rolls
on a weekly
out
basis?
Us. Yeah.
No, I've been taking a piss out of work because like suddenly a word comes along. You go, where's that weird word? When did that come from? And then it's like you find out some fucked up origin of the word.
Mm. What word do you like at the moment, Dan?
I don't know, you put me on the spot there. I don't know. Yeah.
Quintessential,
so many.
I used in a written
quintessential.
Yeah. Quintessential, I used, yeah. I'm quite pleased with that one.
Ooh, nice. I'll tell you what, one I've been busting out in the work emails is a lot more, is considered. It's a fucking great word.
I got told off using the word noteworthy too much.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I always put, well, I think we should have a more considered approach to this.
Yeah,
and
I
it's
like
this
that.
So vague.
Yeah,
I think we need to spend a bit more time.
You're not going to consider it at all.
No. Yeah. Do you really crank up the sort of like office bullshit by using the term going forward afterwards?
No, there's, you know, it's like it's kind of political. There's some people we just talk like on the level, but there's when you get to certain spheres, usually the upper management levels, you have to sprinkle in terms like that.
I used to work with a guy and he swears blind that he once went to a meeting and someone said, yeah, he says, I've climbed up on a ladder. I've looked in his window and I know the colour of this geezer's duvet.
Oh, God.
Brilliant. That's so good.
There was one where we was in this meeting. There's like one of the head of the finance guys. They were talking about a project they were doing, but it didn't work out. And someone said something, it didn't actuate in eventuality.
Oh, my God.
What?
The Starship Enterprise.
Yeah. Or he didn't make any fucking money.
That's yeah, well done. Yeah, it didn't work, I believe.
It didn't work.
Yeah, I do like some words. If you're using Microsoft Word, I do like sometimes they just tell you in a little blue underline, fucking just change that to closed. You know, just change it to one word for fuck's sake. I get told off by programs now, never mind fucking people.
No, sometimes I think my phone tries to make out I'm dyslexic because I'll often type a sentence and they'll just change a perfectly fine word. And it's a fucking gobbledygook.
Yeah, I don't know why my phone. I can type loads of stuff out, and it will just come up with as if I've typed X hamster out. I don't know why. I can't even imagine why it'd do that. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I hate autocorrect especially when you use a bit of slang or you just shorten words. Like, send me your deets, and it just changes it.
Yes, it is.
What is it? The fact that I'm using the word deets.
Deets.
Yeah.
Because I had someone I used to work with, I didn't like too much. And she said she didn't like one of those mashup words. So obviously I used that all the fucking time. You know what it's like when someone says...
Damn.
I've guessed them, that was it.
Some people just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah, I'm one of those fucking people.
Yeah, you are.
Well, let's have a competition between the three of us then to use the most stupid phrase in somewhere in our social media and see if the other people spot it this week.
All right, okay.
So that's the listeners to play along as well. So
I mean, that could be any phrase I say on social media.
Yeah.
But I'll think about that going forward.
Thank you.
What you've learned from this little chat about writing for other people is, like, we do it. I'm not sure how good I am at it, but there's a comic book that's just come out. Tony's a pro at it, and Dan is gonna do it now.
There you go.
So we've achieved something. We're getting Dan to write for someone else, aren't we, Dan?
Yes, I'd love to.
Now it's time for the shout outs. Do we have any shout outs, gents?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Moving on. Tony, do you want to go first?
Ask Clown Monthly is coming out and
Oh dear. Go on, just carry on.
No, you're doing the one I was gonna do. Dan, aren't you? You're doing that one. Yeah.
Yes.
So the other one I've got is Omen to That, episode 2. I'm on with Damien Edwardson. It's his podcast. It's on Spotify and it's on Podbean. I think it's coming onto iTunes this week. I went through talking about you know, how we accept a review and how we review it, with Claire Hemsworth from the Fandomonium Network, who's a good egg. I rant a bit on it. Thanks to Chris Wildgoose and Laura Trinder, who I had a socially distant meeting with yesterday. We had a coffee, and I bought a page of Porcelain. Yes, nice. Baby. Yeah. That's my two. There you go.
I'm going to give a shout out to Kia Wordsmith, issue 2, which is on Kickstarter now.
Yes, indeed.
A young woman, Kia Wordsmith, frees a creature from a wizard's tower and begins to realize this act of kindness has consequences. It's currently got 22 days to run, as you're listening to this. It's already smashed its target. So there's high confidence in this comic and the title.
So, I think there's a tier where you can get a piece of art from Ian.
Oh, you can't miss out on that.
It's already done mine. It's fucking brilliant. Yeah,
that I'm just, well, there's quite a few tiers,
right?
But all gone.
When you say there's quite a lot of tiers, is it like tiers for specific covers and things like that?
Yeah, it's all different. Original art, loads of original art. God, yeah, there's really worth checking this out. So try Kia Wordsmith on Kickstarter. We'll put the thing in the link in the show notes. It's written by Dave West and drawn by fan favorite Ian Ashcroft.
Hey.
So check it out now. The other shout outs, John Tucker did an art stream yesterday. 12-hour art stream for charity. And it was great. I dropped in and out several times during the day. John's an absolute fucking beast. We've been able to draw and talk that long. It's a skill to simultaneously kind of draw and not talk fucking drivel. Do you know what I mean?
I can't, like at a convention table, if I've got to draw like a commission or whatever, I can't do it. I can't talk at the same time.
Some of them he has roughed out and prepped, but some of them he didn't. He just was like working on freehand. But he's got like a little groove he gets into, and he's got a few like funny subjects who, like, he keeps saying it's getting really toxic in the chat, and it's not really. It's just it's just John Ottaway and Cliff Gumber mucking about, to be fair, in the most part. But yes, it's a really little, it's a nice little community chat as well. If you get into it, everyone's like really friendly and takes a piss out of each other. And Cliff Gumber keeps banning John's wife in the chat, which is he made Cliff a moderator at one point, and Tom Curry was a moderator. Yeah, it's good fun. Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah. So John streams at least once a week, usually on a Friday afternoon. So install that Twitch app and get watching.
I have it playing while I'm working, sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice things to have on. Another shout out to Tom Stewart. It's his birthday this week, by the way. Happy birthday,
Happy
Tom.
Birthday, Tom.
Hey, happy birthday, Tom.
There's two things happening in the Awesome Comic group on Facebook. We've got I posted up a thing on Friday, I believe it was, like the work in progress thread.
Oh, I like that one. That's a really good one. Yeah.
I just asked someone to post up a bit of you're working on and tell us a little bit about it, and it did really well. I'd like to make that into sort of regular thing, maybe every couple of weeks, so it doesn't kind of dominate too much. Tons of great work in there.
Really good.
It's amazing. Yeah. Someone commented, they said, like, about British comics in the comics, and they're looking here, and it's like, wow, this is fucking awesome. And that echoes my feelings exactly. I'd love to see this stuff all out in the world.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff there, isn't it? Yeah. And if you're a slightly sly-ish kind of person, you can get your Kickstarter or your project that you're selling under the wire in there.
Yes.
As a couple of people have. And we don't really mind that. That's fine. It's just, I've just knocked back another Kickstarter link. So none of that, please.
I mean, if you're going to say I'm working on this for my Kickstarter,
that's fine. Yeah. Adrian is Palomine. Adrian Hashimi's working on Tales from the Strait, and he did the same. He just said, look, this is stuff I'm working on for my Patreon, and that is absolutely fine. No problem with that at all.
We're just not mad on dropping in adverts.
Yeah, exactly.
So even when I did a shameless plug for the comic, and it was like, right, okay, let's at least try and open it as a topic of discussion as well.
But yeah, that's the idea.
Launching a comic book. So, you know.
Yes, and we've got the dinosaur draw off coming up this Friday.
And people better not draw me.
Well, they will now. I'm going to.
I've done one this week. I've managed to find time to draw a dinosaur.
Oh, nice one.
And my wife said that doesn't look anything like a Tyrannosaurus. So I said, well, an Allosaurus then. It's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever this looks like, that's what the dinosaur is.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's tension butcher old in your face. Household. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, who does she think she is?
She's the harshest critic.
Yeah. She's not a listener.
Right? Your missus out to be such a hard ass, and she's actually the nicest person.
She's nice. And that's the all from me.
Yes, and I've planned to plug MI666, but I'll do that at the end of the show anyway. So, but we do have a few comic books to recommend you this week. Who would like to go first?
Can I go first? One of mine.
Yeah, go babes.
Go down.
Southern Bastards, Volume 1. You recommended it. Both of you have talked about this title, and I got the first volume. It's fucking great. It's absolutely just... You know those comics sometimes you pick up and then within two pages, you're fucking so into it. And you're like, you're in that world. There's no distractions. Mm-hmm. You're just in the story and you want to see where it goes. That was like that with Southern Bastards. Like just transported to that world. And this the story just absolutely caught up in it, thinking, where's this going to go? And Jason Aaron really plays with kind of like expectations and tropes, and think, I know where this is going, and it doesn't go there.
There's a real roughness to the art, isn't there, which I really like, you know.
And just a pervasive hostility.
Yeah, such an atmosphere, isn't there?
It's a hostile book, isn't it, in a lot of ways. You know, narratively, it's quite hostile.
Yeah,
tense.
It's kind of a world of violence and tension. And
guys,
no
if you like that,
really
you've
happy.
Got to read Scout. You've got to go on to that next.
Mm. I've got that coming. I've ordered that as well.
Oh,
someone,
man, I love that book so much.
Have they ever done like a big omnibus of that? Have they ever done that?
I think they've done bigger collections where there might be two or three trades in
one.
Because
I've only got trade one, which I haven't, you know, it's just sat on my shelf and I haven't read yet, so I need to...
Yeah, they do bigger collections. I think you can get them now, mate, it's so labyrinthine. It's so clever. It's not... on occasion it's not the easiest art, but once your eye gets to it, a bit like Southern Bastards actually, once your eye gets locked into that style, it's more pleasant, you know.
Yeah, and you can't see anything else that would fit the story.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And I know I remember the 11 o'clock comics guys, they would talk about it a lot, and as it sort of built up to its end, it was like, you know, this is like a perfect sort of ending to these 60 issues.
He handles character so well, man. He's so good. There's some people who suddenly you're like, oh, no one's good in that book. A bit like Southern Bastards. There's very little actually good blokes in it. You know?
It's weird because this could almost be like a stage play or something, because there's very few locations. You've got like the main character's house, the diner, and the grave. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
But it plays out so well, and it's that kind of the Jason Latour on the artwork, really
just phenomenal, isn't it? Yeah,
just that ability of kind of like conjuring up atmosphere and places in the world with minimal detail is just blows my mind. Love it.
Yeah.
So he ordered 2 and 3. They're coming in.
Well, I mean, two and three is where the story sort of really sort of blossoms, and it opens out into this world of college football and crime and brutality and revenge, and it's just so good. They get the whole aesthetic of it, like the red covers and everything were just always spot on. Is the whole story finished now?
No, I think the creative team have taken a step back.
Yeah, it's taken a while to come out now, isn't it? I'm not sure what's going on. I'm not caught up completely actually. I've still got a few issues to go.
I need to get back into it, because it was it is one of those sort of comics which are quite rare comics in some ways. You read them within 5 minutes and you don't know where the time has gone and where's your next issue. That kind
you're not looking at the page count on your iPad, whatever it is. I know what you mean.
That's a top recommendation. Tony, do you want to go next?
I've been reading a lot online and trying to avoid certain platforms, but seeing a lot on Twitter, especially about artists of color, because of the Black Lives Matter thing, and I think there's an artist who meant so much to me as a kid growing up, but I don't see his name mentioned, and I'm just surprised. And that's Ron Wilson. His work was so regularly in my eye line, you know, his Marvel 2-in-1 stuff, and the Thing series he did. I think he drew the Thing for like 11 years straight or something. And I just having met him, I met him at New York, and he drew me a commission. I think I've repeated this a few years ago on the pod, but I said to him, oh, do you want to draw us, you know, my usual go-to, Shang-Chi? And he goes, is that the one whose hands light up? And I went, no, that's Iron Fist. Do you want to draw Iron Fist then? He went, what does he look like again? And I just went, Ron, draw me the thing, geezer. And he went, I can do that, my friend. And I sat with him and he drew the thing and it was the best experience. And his originals were so cheap. I can't remember who was next to him. God, I think it might have been Norton, actually. Norton was next to him going, charge more, Ron. What are you doing? Charging. Yeah, it's like that. And I think he's a bit undervalued in his own head. And I don't think he should be, because I think he set the standard for stuff. And so I picked up Marvel Premiere 55 from August 1980, cover by Ron Wilson and inked by Joe Sinnott, written by David Michelinie and Bob Layton, pencils by Ron Wilson and Joe Sinnott. But that's Joe Sinnott inking you. Do you know what I mean? How cool is that? Joe Sinnott gives his line a bit of a sort of smoother line, I think. He smooths it all about a bit. And from a kid who was reading a lot of Byrne and Perez at the time, it fits within that. It's not exactly those artists, but there's something to it. Colours by Glynis Wein, letters by John Costanza. And it's basically because David Michelinie also created Taskmaster, which I know you're a fan of, V, aren't you?
Yeah.
And it's around the same period. So Wonder Man and the Beast were kind of like the two buddy cop characters, the comedic characters in the Perez and Byrne Avengers on the run up to issue 200. And Wonder Man was always a bit of a second, third, fourth stringer, wasn't he? He was never particularly written well. He was always, you know, he was a powerful guy who went toe to toe with Thor on occasion. And he was in the past, he'd been a villain and he'd been resurrected from the dead about fucking four times. And in this, he goes back to his roots and he meets somebody he used to work with. And he fights a sort of local mob that turns out to be the Magia. Do you remember the Magia? That was sort of like a tech mafia. Yeah. And he goes up against the Silver Dreadnought and it's really well done. And there's a tragic moment at the end of it where an old friend of his who sort of stepped up finally to help out his friend dies. And it's genuinely like a really good book. It's, I remember we went on a family holiday to France and it was one of the few comics I had in the back of the car and I read this book to death. And I hadn't read it for 20 years, 30 years, this book. And at every panel, there's a bit where he sort of shoves his fists into a wall and his feet and climbs a wall and just little bits like that. So good. Ron Wilson, if you see him, he looks like... who's the actor from The Green Mile who plays like the giant geezer in it?
Michael Duncan Clark.
He looks like him. That's what he looks like. He's... big geezer, but you know he's quite in, you know, you look at him think geezer, he's fucking hell, but he's actually like the nicest, sweetest guy. You know, that's absolutely love the guy's
brilliant life. Yeah,
and his Marvel 2-in-1, he turned his hand, although obviously I read a Nighthawk issue, the thing, a Nighthawk in Marvel 2-in-1, and in the same panel it showed Buckingham Palace, the House of Parliament and the Trafalgar Square in the same panel. I thought, you ain't been to London, have you?
That fucked me off. There's an issue of Spider-Man where he comes to London and he fights these two villains called Night and Fog, and it was like it was fucking Running Man like in Victorian times,
yeah,
like foggy streets and like cobblestones, yeah. And I was like, what the fuck, where's this set?
So it's a one-off. It's Marvel Premiere number 55. It's just a single issue. The cover is extremely iconic. If you guys Google it, you'll see how lovely it is. It's just a brilliant cover. It's one and done. It's on the Marvel app as well. Really good.
Was it against any Marvel 2-in-1?
It's Marvel Premiere 55. Nice. And it's got him holding up the Silver Dreadnought. It's a great cover, absolutely great cover. It's just great story, lot of heart, superb action, brilliant art. Here we go, ready? Quintessential story about Wonder Man. There you go.
Nice.
Nobody knows what to do with him now. He's been fucked about. He's a villain for a bit. He was dead again. His power's now ionic or something. He's just not as super strong. And it's probably because of this issue, I own one of those Bowen busts. You know those statues? Yeah. I've got one of him in his safari jacket. You know, the old Wonder Man safari jacket thing and sunglasses. That's the one I've got, and I absolutely love it. In fact, if we put the thread up for this episode, I might put the thing sketch and the bust up in that.
That's a good shout. Do that.
Yeah.
I think Ron Wilson is, like you say, definitely overlooked. There's so many great artists, and certainly like black artists.
Workmanlike guys, you know, just put the work out there.
You know, if you don't know who we're talking about, all you've got to do is go to the Wikipedia page, and you're just seeing this list of titles. And these were artists that, you know, they weren't mentioned in things like Wizard magazine and things like that. You look at these titles that he worked on and things he's created and just think, my god. And you know, also one thing I think the mind is when it comes to original pages, because god knows there must be a lot of original pages of Ron's out there, what are the prices going to be like of his compared to people that were working at the same time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That...
Yeah, don't say that because I'm going to Google it now and see if I can buy a page.
Yeah. Did some stuff for the official handbook in the Marvel Universe.
Okay. Yeah.
I've seen that he drew the entire run of Marvel's Masters of the Universe from 1986 to 88. I might have to try and find them. I don't know what. You know when you see a title and you just think, I want them all.
Yeah. Big brawny blokes fighting each other. It's Ron. I got to tell you. You know.
Yeah.
All those years of doing the thing, and he was in that wrestling federation, and you know he's fighting fucking all space aliens. You know. Yeah. Good stuff.
I always wondered what it'd be like an artist at Marvel, and then they'd ring out and say, "Look, you need to do Guardians of the Galaxy 12 this month." Oh, right then. And then the next month, you go, "Oh, we need some stepping on Thor for an issue." Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. That'd be.
Girl needs someone this month, and it's like almost like you have to change the style a bit sometimes. Yeah.
So kind of flick around what you're doing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay. My first one is one I picked up from True Believers earlier this year, written by Dan Whitehead and drawn by one of my favourite artists on the indie scene, David Hitchcock.
Oh yeah.
There's a name that.
You Spring Hill Jack.
Oh, Spring Hill Jack. That's a classic one from the indie scene, wasn't it?
Yeah.
This is Frankenstein, Texas. Victor Frankenstein and his monster were believed lost in the Arctic. But this was a lie. Instead, they fled west to the New World, to America. This is the story of what happens next. And it's just exactly what it says on the tin. It's a Wild West story with that classic sort of Victorian. You know, if you've seen David Hitchcock's work, it's perfect for those, you know, those historical, especially turn of the century. Spring Hill Jack itself was a Victorian book, wasn't it? It was set Victorian, wasn't it? You know, and like Madame Samurai and things like that. His is a very sort of penciled artwork that I just absolutely adore. From the first time I picked up something from, I've got a few of his books on my shelf. So, and when I spoke to Dan on the interviews on the podcast, and I bought a few of his books, I saw that there was this one, and Frankenstein's actually. A version of him is actually Dan Whitehead's sort of banner at the convention. And as soon as I saw it, I thought, oh, Frankenstein in the Wild West. All right, I'm already in. As soon as I saw Hitchcock's name, I bought it. How much is it? That sort of thing. And it's great. It's gothic. There's a lot of character work going on. When you think Frankenstein, Texas, this isn't the sort of Frankenstein that you get in, just say, well, once again, the DC comics. This isn't a superpowered, you know, Gatling gun sort of Frankenstein. You know, this isn't a superhero book. This is something that's, you know, very thoughtful and like a lot of Wild West stories. You know, it's almost Unforgiven meets Penny Dreadful. That kind of mashup, and it's very interesting the way the story goes and the way the story ends. Anyone who's sort of knows the story of Frankenstein will know that Victor Frankenstein himself isn't really the hero. It's more of the monster. Wonderful action scenes. There's a lot. I mean, fair play to anyone that does a Wild West book and has to draw horses constantly. It's got shootouts. It's got everything. I think some wonderful pinups in the back as well. This came out in 2018. It was first printed. So, once again, like this show, you know, it's always a new book to someone. Mm-hmm. And so if you see it, look for Dan on we'll put all the links in the show notes and stuff, but there's some of the pinups we got, like Jerry Parrish, John McRae, Doug Slack, PJ Holden, fantastic.
Oh, he's got a few quid to make that one.
And so I wonder what David Hitchcock's doing now. Because this is a small.
Is he doing some 2000 AD stuff? I know he's certainly pitching some.
Yeah, he could be. I mean, the first page itself is a sort of almost a splash page, you know. But the majority of it is an old sort of, looks like a pirate ship, you know. They're sort of old naval vessels of that time, and immediately you just sort of think, fucking hell, that's someone who puts in a lot of work.
Yeah. he's got a real pencil-y line, isn't he? You see a lot of his original art. There's so much pencil work on it.
Yeah, but it really works in, you know, as soon as you see it, you know his work, you know his artwork.
Did he do The Visible Man for the 2000 AD special? I've got a feeling he did.
He may have done.
Yeah, he's done some stuff for them. Yeah.
And I wonder if he has original pages. And certainly if it's all, if it's all pencils and stuff, how he treats it to stop it from smudging, etc., and things like that. It's yeah, but yeah, Frankenstein Texas is a great one. Yeah, and we've talked about the Wild West. Did we do a show about the Wild Western books? We did, didn't we?
No, I can't remember.
Didn't we do it with
we did a genre show, didn't we?
With Chris.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's really well handled. It's yeah, just get it because it was really good, and it might have slipped under a few people's radar. And cool. And also, Dan, it was my first thing I read of Dan Whitehead, and I know I've got another couple of books to read of his. And yeah, it was cracking stuff from him as well. So we'll have to get him on the show one day in the future. Who's next?
I'll go again. I do my quick recommends first before I have a bit of a bitch about another comic. I read The Bones of the Sea by Garth A. Hawkins this week.
Oh, lovely.
And absolutely love it. It's a fantastic comic. It's, I see a lot of myself in the observations that Gareth makes within the story and the comic. And it's on Comic House, so you can go check that out and see what you think of that. Also popped up the United issue one.
Yeah, cool.
My friend Johnny Cannon loved that. It's kind of like I see United and Vanguard as very much like the kind of flip side of the coin, looking at kind of like our own take on British superheroes.
Yeah,
and I think he finished the pencils on his new on the collection, didn't he?
Yeah,
I think this week. Yeah,
he was saying how long it's taken him, but that was well worth the wait. I read Aletha Volume 1 on Comic House, which I found a bit of a strange one, to be honest. It doesn't have a synopsis here. Oh, it kind of does. In a small town with a declining population, a mysterious robot falls from the sky, which doesn't, I wouldn't say it does it justice, that synopsis. Give it a read and see what you think of it. There's a very strange element to that one. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I think I might have to check it out again before I pass judgment on it. But I ordered in a trade off from Marvel, The Amazing Spider-Man, purely on the strength of like I really like Ryan Otley's artwork.
Right.
And I'm going to have to try and give it another go because I read the first issue and was just absolutely fucking bored to tears. I was just like, don't care for this. Really. You know, like Southern Bastards, I got 3 pages in and I'm fucking in that world. Mm. In this, I just read it as I don't really give a shit. It's not the best sort of thing to sort of be approaching the comic with. Ryan's artwork, I don't know what's happened because it says this comic has been done with Humberto Ramos, and right. Both of these artists, I really like their stuff.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure how they've worked together on this, but it feels like it's not as good as his Invincible stuff. Like it just feels a lot safer and not quite right. I hard to put my finger on it. But
so is Umberto inking him or something? Or
I'm not quite sure because in the it says pencilers Ryan Otley with Humberto Ramos, and there's got 2 inkers credited. So I don't know what the fuck's going on. Does someone do the outlines and someone does the finishes, or
I don't know. Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't really know.
So, maybe there was a deadline or something that was needed working on.
But it seems like that's for the entire run.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's interesting.
It's the entire run.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And there's might complain to Panini because there's inside there's like a Marvel black on dark blue with Spidey's eyes. And it looks like all the ink's fucked up. And on the main masthead, they've introduced some kind of embossing effect, like it's a computer-generated embossing effect on The Amazing Spider-Man.
Right.
But it seems so half-assed. There's like just like a bit of a shadow on the letters. And I'm like, well, what the fuck's that there? It just looks dirty. So I thought, let's see, lie down online. And I've looked at all the covers online and it's not on there. So presumably someone has added that. But it just looks shit. So yeah, that's me going in on The Amazing Spider-Man.
That's me. My interpretation of you there doing it is what I've been doing is a bit of lockdown boredom. I've been ordering things to see what they're like almost.
Yeah. This was just like, let's order this, see what it's like. Cause fucking Ryan Otley's artwork. I love him from Invincible. Let's see what the comic's like. And I should have known because I think I tried to read Nick Spencer's Captain America. And I was just like, that was just a comic piling up that I didn't read. I was like, I don't really like this.
Yeah.
So
But you need to get Spider-Man. I've said it to you before, but you need to get on board Savage Dragon, man. It's so up your street. It's so good.
Yeah, should go back onto it. I should get back onto
it. Love it at the moment. So good. Yeah, it's a bit lively. I think we talked about it about a year ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
A few years ago with the sperm fountain. But
I downloaded an issue to and read it. I was like, bloody hell.
Yeah,
he just goes for it. That's great. I love that. You create a, if it's not for you, it's not for you. But yeah. It is what it is.
But the lines and the fights and the, you know, it's like Kirby for a new age. It's lovely. Absolutely love it. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's me.
Nice. Good-o. Tony.
Always back to me again, isn't it? So I'm on a Kickstarter I got through this week. Pop Kill, issue one, first cut, 52 pages, full color, published by Paper Films. Story by Jimmy Palmiotti and Dave Johnson, art by Juan Santa Cruz, colors Brian Reber, lettering Sean Conot, cover Dave Johnson. I sent you the cover got through on the WhatsApp, didn't I? What a fucking cover that is.
Yeah.
Just typical Dave Johnson. Amazing. A combination of cool movie poster with pop art with comic, you know, stylings, just gorgeous stuff. A techie spy, a sort of tech burglar, breaks into a facility. He gets caught in the act of what he's doing. He kills the guards and escapes on a motorcycle. Boss isn't too happy with him, and he has to go after, there's a trespasser, and he goes after the aforementioned, you know, there's people coming after him all over the place, put it that way. So turns out that Pop Kill is because this is industrial espionage between two fizzy pop companies, the Fizz One Company and Pop So Furious.
Amazing.
Yeah, John Pyle, who's the aforementioned tech burglar, works for them. But the two companies are owned by brothers who are in rival companies. There's some great moments. This is not for the week of spirit. There's a one point where this sort of sexy chauffeur arrives up to pick John Pyle up from his you know, typical, you know, Bond-esque sort of cool flat on a, you know, the top of a skyscraper, and in it she's trying to look for him, and there's this big pile of naked women, and he shouts, she says, oh, have you seen him? And he shouts, I'm here. And he climbs out from underneath this pile of naked women, and then someone warns her, watch out, he's some kind of pervert. He's driven by the need of money and the need of sexual gratification. He's this sort of crazy, sly, smooth character. It's really good fun, absolutely fun. There's moments of it that are a bit Frank Cho-esque. I'm going to put it that way. This a lady gets out of the swimming pool. Of course she does. She's got no top on. Here we go. That's it. It's right up my street. And there's some in the back of it. There's some great not safe for work pages by Dave Johnson, which are also good. Obviously Dave Johnson, friend of the show, as we like to call him now. There's a little interview with them at the back, and there's a few pages from the second issue. So it's not a short read. It's, as I say, it's in total it's 52 pages. The art is that solid relationship of cartoony but action. You know, you can get both. Great colour, good action, loads of character in the faces. It's essentially James Bond if he worked for big industry and had a libido even bigger than Bond's. got mine off Kickstarter. Just came through. I just plumped for the digital, which seemed sensible. I suspect they will collect it at some point. It does not at all take itself seriously, but it's the usual thing of this sort of slightly sleazy, very violent, after money and sex kind of spy who we think will obtain himself a soul by the end of it, or maybe they'll twist the tail and that won't happen. But that's kind of where it's going. Santa Cruz also worked on The Resistance and Painkiller Jane with Palmiotti, if you know his work. He's got that sort of thing. Anything by that little bunch of creators, I think, is good. We're big fans of Dave Johnson, but Jimmy Palmiotti don't put out a bad book, does he? Yeah, you know, no. He's a class writer.
Yeah.
If you go to paperfilms.com, you can find more about it. I'm not sure if it's on Comixology yet, but I'd be surprised. It only came through on the Kickstarter for me this week. I also got another book through from Justin Gray, which is another cracker, which I might talk about next week because they're buddies. But yeah, that little crowd of creators, I'm always a fan of them because they're the sort of Marvel Knights guys. They know what they're doing. They know where to push your buttons and stuff.
Yeah.
And, Pop Kill, issue one. There you go. That's my one.
Nice one.
Nice. And I'm going to finish this up with something that will give you a nosebleed. I sent a couple of panels to my co-host earlier this week, and it was
Good.
It was something that, like you say, just take a chance on, like Dan did. You know, you just try this out.
Yeah.
It was a little more expensive than the usual on Comixology for a single issue. It was $2.39 for 28 pages. It's from Extreme Corp, written by Jared Baker and AJ Kakani. Art is from Jared Baker. It says the genre is horror, but I think there's so much more going on than this. And this is Horserer, number one. Chapter one, Beer for My Corpses. And the synopsis is 24 pages of pure, unbridled horsery. Unravel the mystery of the Horserer in his debut comic. I'm having trouble describing this because it's indescribable, which is a great choice for an audio medium. No, it is absolutely mental, this book. It all centres around an evil sorcerer who is also a blue horse. So he's a horserer. And through evil machinations, he creates an evil beer. He gets someone to create an evil beer. And it winds up in the modern world, and people that drink it, they end up melting and their skin falls off, and weird things happen, and they end up in alternate dimensions. Put together that with a load of sort of slacker losers and just strangeness, this was a trip, man. I know I'm going to sound like the Big Lebowski, but this was, I just couldn't put it down. It felt like one of those cartoons like Metalocalypse from Adult Swim, you know, those real sort of crazy.
Yep.
Is it Super Teen Aqua Hunger Force? Or?
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Just the real sort of like. Even the art has that sort of simple sort of style, but it's dealing with stuff that's really messed up. If you like, you know, those sort of cartoons and the stuff from like Tim and Eric, it's that sort of randomness. It's someone, it just feels like a creator going, fuck it, this is the comic I'm gonna make. And there's certain pages, like when there's a little bit more emphasis on a bit of gore. It's not a supremely gory comic, actually it kind of is, because the title called card for Horserer on a big splash page is someone being ripped in half and their entrails are spelling out the word Horserer. Which is crazy. Yeah, it's got a very simple art style. It's very colourful. The main character, you'll never look at a blue horse again the same way. And I thoroughly recommend it because it was one of those beautiful, what did I just read? I don't know. Is this person on drugs? I don't know. Do I want more of it? I think I do. Yeah, it's just great. It sort of tees it up like there's going to be more of it.
Okay.
Yeah, which is quite good. Even though it's got like an end sort of panel at the end of it.
Really individual visuals, man. I really like what you sent through.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I mean, it ends with a page set that just says horsepower. So yeah, it's about an evil sorcerer horse. What more do you want in your life? I mean, one of the lines is, make me proud, Tristan. If you do right by me, I might even give you your mouth back. Make of that what you will. And go to wolf.baker on Instagram for more art. And check out extreme-corp.com for more comics. I mean, it's worth it just for the back page, which is a wonder. It's something that could be in the National Gallery. A wonderful landscape portrait of the Horserer enjoying a celebratory beer in the catacombs of Hypnox after a mostly successful necromancy. You know, that sort of classic. Yeah, it's mental, and I loved it. And it's something a bit different. Sometimes you just need something irreverent and just doesn't give a fuck. It was, it felt like, I mean, the sort of energy that Atomic Hercules gives me of someone, you know, just going for it. Just be like, this is just going to be whatever. You know,
I like that idea.
Yeah, this is what it is. So I got it from Comixology. It's part of the Comixology Submit. If you want something that's totally random, like I say, if you like the Adult Swim sort of cartoons, this is definitely for you, I think, because it definitely feels like that. You know, sort of when you finish watching an episode, you just think, "The hell was that?" So I loved it. It was great and something very different, especially from what I read on it on a weekly basis. It's nice to it's nice to check out something like this.
Different. I got one more. Don't forget.
Oh, go for it. Yeah, go on, Tony.
Yeah, it's a bit of a it's an interactive one. This one because I want to see what you think. So it's a textbook about comics. So it's the British Invasion, about from sequot.org. Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman, Grant Morrison, and the invention of the modern comic book. Came out in 2016, written by Greg Carpenter. It's only £15 on Amazon. It's pretty good. 490 pages. I'm not even halfway through it yet. So it focuses on those three creators. And I wanted to get to you, find out from you three where you grade them, who would be your favourite and who would be your least favourite out of those three. So Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman, Grant Morrison. I'd be interested to see you guys, a bit younger than me, how you would rate them. Who would be your, who would you be your favourite then? Let's have who would be your favourite.
Do you know what? I haven't read too much of any of them. I know that's
you've read some Alan Moore though, surely, haven't you?
I've read some of all of them. You know, in some way, shape, or form. But
I'd probably go Grant Morrison, Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman.
Okay, so Neil Gaiman at the bottom.
Yeah,
I would say more Gaiman Morrison.
Oh, Gaiman. Okay. Yeah, interesting. I'd say more Morrison Gaiman. I'm not a big fan of Gaiman actually. And of them all, he's the one who's written the least comics. To be fair, I think.
Yeah.
He seems to talk quite a lot.
It's hard to rank more because of the influence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I kind of never really had any problem with Neil Gaiman stuff, but just never really, you know, like some comedians make you laugh. Some days it's kind of a subjective and Gaiman stuff never really kind of did it for me.
Yeah. I mean, I think Sandman kind of doesn't get talked about as much as it used to. Was when we started the show, you used to hear about Sandman all the time, didn't you? The big books, but I don't think it's feeling the test of time as some other books, I think. They've all had their high points and low points for me. I think, you know, I think of all of them, in regards to consistency, I'd probably say Grant Morrison one is the least consistent, although I have really loved some of his books, some of them I've found.
I think Sandman's going to come back into the zeitgeist of it because they've got this radio play sort of version of it, haven't they?
He's in it, isn't he? I think
he's some sort of narrator, and you've got like
Christ. I hope he says more than one word every 10 seconds.
Who is it? You've got like Michael Sheen, James McAvoy. There's loads of sort of actors in it, isn't it?
He does make a lot out of his products, doesn't he? So Good Omens, his book years ago, and it seems to keep coming back up.
Well, they got fucking James Corden in it, we're all right.
Good Omens, also Terry Pratchett, let's not forget.
They both wrote it. Yeah, I think I did read an interview with Terry Pratchett back in the day, and they said, oh, how was it working with the amazing Neil Gaiman? And he says, yeah, it's really good. He wrote the numbers at the bottom of the pages. The writing style of this book is for the fans of comics. I would say if you're coming in and you're not really a fan of comics, you might find it a little dry. It does really hold them in a little bit too much reverence, I think. They're just writers, for God's sake, kids. Do you know what I mean? Let's not get carried away. There's some little. There's only really one thing that I learned. I haven't so far in the reading of it. That I didn't know already, isn't it? And it's the fact that maybe I knew this and I forgot. There's a few chemicals under the bridge. But the Gaiman and Morrison interviewed on the same day in the same hotel and for work at DC, and they both pitched the same character, which neither of them went on to do. Do you know what character that was, or could you guess?
Oh man.
A DC character. Think about the sort of stuff they like writing and what their personal interests are. I might lead you a bit that way.
Dr. Fate. A little hint.
Fucking hell, well done.
Was it?
Nice one, B.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Fucking hell. I literally just thought, who's the Doctor Strange of the DC universe?
Yeah.
Tourette's-like shout that was completely fucking right. Yeah. Nice work.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Yeah, so it was Dr. Fate. For those that haven't Red Sea Co-op. They're kind of they put out some interesting stuff. Some that's a little bit boring, but some of it's pretty interesting. So they did a book called Moving Target on Green Arrow, which I bought recently. They did another one which is all about Morrison. They've done some canon books about different companies, you know, not the studio, but the canon of different companies, comics companies. But you will probably know them for the following, because they made some movies. So they made Grant Morrison Talking with Gods, which is quite a good documentary. Warren Ellis Captured Ghosts, which is another. I think it's called Captured Ghosts, which is another good one. But they also made the Image Revolution movie.
Ah, okay.
I'm responsible for that, and that's where I originally got it from. I think I bought it as a download from their site years ago, before it was on. It's on Amazon now, on Prime, isn't it?
Yeah,
now, I think.
Yeah, that's where I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you go to Sequart, which is Sequart.org, you can find all this stuff. Yeah, their books are available through Amazon and stuff like that, which is where I bought this one. But it's a big old brick of a book. If you're not really invested, I would suggest not. But it's it brought out some interesting points, and I was just interested to hear where you felt. I mean, there's a few writers I'd put better than Gaiman, to be fair, out of that appear in the sort of British invasion. I'd put Pat, you know, I'd put
the thing is, with a lot of the, like, especially some of these big name writers, it's weird. I like my reading sort of, like, I didn't really read those ones. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? That's why some of the big gaps in my reading are some of the ones that people consider to be all-time classics or, like, you know, must-reads. Yeah. I'm like, well, I haven't read that, because it just, you know, it either passed me by or I just wasn't into it at the time and I just wanted something.
Well, I'm going to recommend you read Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
Yeah. Oh, well, I've got the trade. You got me the trade.
Oh,
right?
Nice.
Yeah,
I think you dig that, man. And D, I reckon.
I mean,
you
that's got
the
some Bernie Wrightson as well, isn't it? That one.
No, that's the original series.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, that's for the previous one with Len Wein, which is a bit different. It's not the Bernie Wrightson you probably know. I think he drew it a bit quicker with a slightly different style. It's not the sort of super detailed stuff that you saw in the Silver Bullet illustrations or stuff like that. It's so imaginative. I actually would be hard pressed to say which I preferred more, the Ween or the Moore books. I actually really like them both for different reasons. And I think, D, you should read The Invisibles, man. I think you'd dig it. I think it's got that.
Okay. Yeah, I've never gone around to get to reading that. That's another classic.
Yeah, by Morrison. I think you'd dig that. It's full of conspiracy theories and different characters and mystical time jumps and, you know, it's that sort of thing. It's very
nice one. Yeah.
Yeah. That's my one, guys. There you go.
Real.
Nice. So we haven't got a guest, but we've still got plenty of recommendations there for you. So check out the show notes, etc. As always, we hope you enjoyed this. This, I don't know, what was this chat? Like every episode, we finished recording. I've completely forgotten everything that I've just said over the past.
Well, we discuss DC right in front of people.
Yeah. I don't actually want to reminding Dan.
Oh, I did it anyway.
Yeah. Well, because you look after me. Yeah, we hope you enjoyed this episode, folks. If there's anything you want us to discuss on some upcoming shows, if we've got any names wrong, or, you know, we just want to let us know something to shout out in the upcoming shows, email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be get some more fantastic guests for you all to check out and discover. If you do Facebook, to go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Like we said, we mentioned the group Awesome Comics Talk earlier. There's loads of great comics community chat, art, and more going on there with no hard selling, so definitely check that out. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on any of the networks, if you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review, and it just helps get the word out about this show and loads of comics. And the other networks like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod Knuckle Dunking.
Yeah, if you listen to us on there, then thank you very much, no matter where you found us. Now, where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
NeverOnAnything.blogspot.com, NeverOnAnything.bigcartel.com, SOSEZOHYZ.
Nice. Daniel? Okay.
You can find me on Twitter. I'm not going on Twitter so much, @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard @VanguardComic.com.
Nice. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Jester Diablo. If you want to buy a copy of the book we mentioned this week, MI666, the debut issue Omens, go to andyblawcomics.bigcartel.com to order your issue today. And yeah, as well as checking out my comic Black on Instagram, which is BLAK the comic. I had a little bit of a pause this week due to things in the world that, you know, just feel so right to sort of post or, you know, new pages all the time.
Fair enough.
But,
yeah.
But I'm going to be back on it. Likewise, though, if you do want to discover some amazing artists and put in the hashtag Drawing While Black, I've been retweeting a lot of stuff out there. There's some fantastic creativity, and it's all about getting a positivity and independent creators that you should discover and stuff. So definitely go forth, discover new comics and creators, and just, you know, the world's a crazy place. So we hope you're all okay and safe wherever you are, and healthy. Look after each other, share the love. I know we're horrible to each other on this show, but we do actually genuinely care. Oh God, did I say that? Oh God.
Yeah, we
do. A bit dirty now.
Yeah. Well, you say that, but you've got a reminder in your calendar that you actually...
I can't wait to see you.
That was a little bit creepy. But genuinely, folks, from all of us here on the Awesome Pub, we hope you're all okay and fighting a good fight. And we love you. And thank you for listening. Go forth, reload your comics, and create comics, and just put forth some good in the world. And from Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. And come on, boys, you can do it this week. What do they do?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Well, that'd do.
It was synchronized.
Yeah. It's easy,
I mean, what is the meaning of the word synchronized?
Pretty much what we just did there.
Yeah, that was a cappella.
Oh, you boys are going to be singing it soon. Bye, everyone.
See ya.
Bye.
Can I achieve something now by going for a wee?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, I can do that.
Is that all right?
Yeah, I'll make a note. Sorry.
I'm going to do that.
I was thinking I'll keep this in the show, but...
You can do. I'll take the mic with me.
Okay, now it's time for the shout-outs. Do we have
Arse
any...
clown.
Right, I'm doing that again.
Let's just carry on.
No.
Yeah, just go.
No.